cars in a driveway, and, you know, like, we can picture that in our minds, right? Yeah. And that's obviously not the reality for a lot of people in today's world, but, you know, things are... Things change slowly, but she simply puts that, quote unquote, the family home is the family investment, which then draws the question, who is able to own a home and who is able to therefore be the family, right? Mm. Because when we have these structures where, as we were saying before, you know, if you're living intergenerationally, who owns that house and where is that wealth? And, you know, how does that wealth then transfer? And in our society, you know, if you don't have that wealth, you're not like, I will never own a home. I you know, like that wealth in my... In my realm doesn't exist to the level that I need it to be able to afford $1 million condominium, for crying out loud, you know, like, and likewise for you, I'm sure. Yeah. Right. Like, and so what does it then mean to, you know, have a family and be invested into that model, right? We're going to switch it up. We're going to do it differently.
Yeah. And I guess that kind of goes back to what Stella was saying about how the rich, don't worry, how the rich are the ones who can exist within this like realm of family and this ideal. And it is an ideal. And I feel like this kind of reflects how with this material change comes, in effect, change in ideas and change in understanding. You know, we see the material change of people are not able to afford these homes as much as they could before, you know, in World War II. And also when you think of, like, who exactly, it's a big question. White people have taken up so many, like, there's gentrification happening, especially here in Vancouver. We can see it, like, all over Canada, all over the world, one could say. And so it's definitely re-solidifying this whole idea of who can own a home and then who can exist in this ideal of a family. It's just the white reproduction of that.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you, Logan. And there is this kind of erasure of a lot of people's realities in the way that they're living. Yeah, like, for example, intergenerational households, single black mothers, single mothers, single fathers, any kind of family that goes outside of the norm isn't really even considered that much by the government in a way. And there is this prioritization of property, and like owning property is part of upkeeping the family, so that is very acknowledged. And just something going off topic slightly is, if we're talking about from before the break, we were talking a bit about family values and who is responsible for like upkeeping those family values. And no matter like your race or class necessarily, it's always landing on the woman super unfairly. To it's like your responsibility to upkeep these family values. And yes, the barriers will stack up differently depending on your place in society, but pretty much every time it is the woman's responsibility to manage paid labor, emotional labor, domestic labor, social labor, all of these things that is turning out to be more and more exhausting to fulfill. Yeah. And I see that as well, like, even in my own family, like my mom had not worked for a while and now she's working again and still taking care of the household while at the same time having to take care of my grandparents as well, because there's that, the, I think it's called, oh yeah, the sandwich generation, where you're having to take care of your parents and your children at the same time. And that is kind of, it's really difficult, especially if you don't have, like, my family can do okay with this because we have enough money to put my grandparents in an old age home eventually and things like that. But for families who don't, and even with childcare and old age homes and everything, it's kind of like it's all on you to do this, and it's normally all on the woman because my mom has an older brother and he's not doing anything. So yeah,
what's his name? We're just gonna go a little shout out.
Yeah,
we'll find it and we'll let you know next week the name and everything.
No, you just want to expose people today. That's what you want.
Can't help it. The people call, you know?
Yeah.
Justice will be served. Community radio. Hey. That's what it is. Let's find people. That one person in the community making it hard for everyone else.
Yeah,
I think that's really interesting. And I feel like that this whole idea of what you were saying with your family can make it possible. And, like, your mother, like, it is incredibly difficult. But then this whole idea of, like, money and race comes into the question, because it's like you're kind of okay, so let me see if I can break down this thought for you. If like the whole idea of womanhood is very much like created as this subservitude, as this caring for others, you know, that's part of the identity of being a woman, and that identity is almost, you could say, reinforced with different categories, be it like racial categories, if you see, or class categories. Like, if you see like a black woman who is going to be predominantly lower income because of course, like, the racist society, the structures that we live in, then this whole idea of care is even more emphasized, is even emphasized, like, even greater, because there is less, you know, money to fall back on, and therefore there's more individual care that needs to be expressed. You know, you can't obfuscate that care onto other people. You can't pay other people to kind of play your role as, like, the woman, quote unquote, of the family, if that makes sense. And so in that sense, it's really interesting to think about how gender reacts with class and with race, and how therefore it's like different understandings of being a woman, if that makes sense. And also, like, I really get what you're saying about, you know, the woman, how, like, I can see that in my mother very much so. Like, she feels this emotional responsibility, mm-hmm. you know, to take care of other people. And I see that so differently compared to, like, my father, for example. Like, of course he cares about the emotional capacity of the home, but it's not in that same degree, mm-hmm. you know. It's like, or even within friendships, like, I see how, like, a lot of the times it's the women who are making sure that even other people's relationships are staying intact.
Yeah, and you're totally right with that too, because with men or with fathers, it's not necessarily even an expectation for them. So yeah, I'm not saying that men don't have the emotional capacity to care for their children and their parents at the same time, but there's not as much of a social expectation for them to be upkeeping, because that's not their traditional role. Like, their traditional role is being a breadwinner or, like, making money, and then that's how they play into the family. And then women have this caretaking role, also socialized as well a bit, and just is very magnified in this nuclear family dynamic. So yeah.
What do you think,
Robin?
This is where intersectional feminist research and critique really comes into play, I think, because it starts to upend some of these foundational assumptions that family life exists in a vacuum, right? And that family life is unaffected by complex social stratification systems that where there's inequity and, you know, not straightforward or maybe they are very straightforward and you know, they're in a box kind of roles defined, right? Where that's not always the way it is. And, you know, what's interesting to me, there's a woman, Catherine Allen, she's quite a preeminent family studies theorist. She was at Virginia Tech for a long time, and I believe she's retired now, but she helped create something called the Family Studies Handbook, and it's $512 on Amazon if you want a copy, so it must be good, right? Either that or it's out of print. but, you know, she suggests that, you know, when families are reduced to quote unquote the family as a prototype that reflects a mythical norm, then we're in trouble, right? Because we can't measure up to that ever, and the expectations of what that starts to look like for us become really unrealistic, and oftentimes it's taking the voice of the domestic realm, if we look at, you know, public versus private, and because the man, you know, in that rubric, the man has got the public voice, the woman has got the private domestic voice. She is the one to tell us about what's going on in the family. And so we don't hear from the other people who are involved in the family about what they do or what they don't do or what works for them or what doesn't work for them. And this is especially true of families that don't look like the norm, but also, you know, when we're considering what perspectives do kids have? Because kids are part of the family, right? And kids don't get they don't get asked about their experience of, you know, what it's like to be in the family. You know, what do you see your mom and dads do, and, you know, what roles do they play? What role do you play? You know, and so these things have to change. And all of these voices and all of these perspectives from everybody who's involved in family life as this non-mythical phenomenon will give us a much more clear picture of what it actually means to be family, which is, you know, I think it's not a surprise that, you know, it's moving away from what is considered that nuclear family into things that are a lot more, I don't know, shared and potentially equitable and just different because we're in a different economic situation, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think we will take another quick song break, but after this song, it would be a good idea to talk about moving away from the nuclear family a bit more and what that looks like, because we've kind of acknowledged why it's not really working that well for a lot of people out there. So yeah, and if you want to introduce this next song, Robin?
Yeah, it's a song called Black Swan by Erica Kulik, and as is a lot of music that that gets played on Intravenous by me, it came just by press release, someone promoting this new album, and I had listened to it, and it seemed like it was a good choice. My understanding is that it was written in response to domestic abuse, and you know, just sort of calling attention to you know, the fact that there's people who are living in spaces with people who are not in safe space, and so this is Black Swan.
Back. This is CGSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. You're listening to Intravenous. We've been talking about the nuclear family, about how the nuclear family potentially reifies the capitalist structures. We've been talking about race, we've been talking about class, about a woman's role within the family. And now we are thinking about talking about different alternatives to the nuclear family before we end this episode.
Yeah, I mean, as we've seen a bit from this conversation, the nuclear family definitely doesn't work to serve most people in the population, or at least we can know that it definitely works for this top 10% or top 1%, I don't know, of rich white people. But I think we can learn a little bit that even though we do live in a very can be individualistic society, that this idea of community is really important for raising a family, and we should, you know, move away from this shame of asking for help when you need it, because it is really hard when it's just four people or four and a half people and running a full household. Both parents are working. Even if just one parent's working, it's hard. So asking for help is definitely important.
I think it's interesting to think about how the family in itself is kind of, you know, I did talk about this in an opposite way, but I'm going to just put it in another way as well, how it's kind of become the individual in a sense, in how, you know, it kind of stops this maybe revolutionary attitude or striking in unions or different forms of resistance, because even if you are the breadwinner, you have to look back and think, I need to make sure that I can continue providing for the people in my family. And it's kind of like family versus the other people. Like, you don't provide for the community, you don't think of the community as much because you have to think about your family first.
Yeah.
And instead of like a me first rhetoric, it's kind of family. Family above everything else, in this sense that kind of takes away potentially from this understanding of the exploited people, the people coming together to resist, one could say.
One could say, yeah.
Yeah, to me it's really clear that the sort of one-size-fits-all definition of family doesn't work. It doesn't serve enough people justice in ways that that really encapsulate what our experience is for good or for bad in family, because you know, sometimes people have a bad experience in their family and being part of a family, and sometimes it's great. And, you know, there's this real fluidity between, you know, what can happen in families. And so I think it's important to, you know, really try to conceptualize what we need and what we want from family. You know, my very good friend, she has this term which I love. It's called framily. And, you know, she had a good family for sure, you know, family of birth, family of origin. But, you know, as we get to choose who those friends are or who those people are in our lives that we weren't born blood to, but they become family to us, you know, and they are, you know, I think Stella, you talked about, you know, this care, right? Like, ideally the family is sort of the community of care that you belong to. And you know, when that looks differently than the man and the woman that you were conceived and born to, then that can just as valuably be your family. And we should be able to call those people our family, and we should be able to attribute, you know, certain things about them to being our family when it's called for, you know, that they can make decisions for us in our need, or they can, you know, help us in whatever ways that we want, and they can, you know, co-mother our children or co-father our children, or, you know, do the things that we just don't have time in our day for, or whatever. But yeah, it becomes this, you know, we talked about it early, this moral, oh, you're outside the box, you know, pushing the boundaries of what it's supposed to look like. So, you know, all of a sudden as deviance against, you know, what this idea of nuclear family is, it's challenging. But I truly believe that it is the way forward in terms of, you know, building a better world. The more people who love us, the better. And the more people who love little kids and adult kids and old kids, the better.
Yeah, definitely well said. And we were talking just a bit over the break about how, and also before the break as well, about just how law is acknowledging only certain structures of family and kind of empowering these certain structures more. And we can see that it's, it's definitely pushing this idea of only one type of family, and like Robin was saying, having co-parents or having a bigger family with just more and more people involved in a child's life with different relationships, giving them different perspectives on things, and just more love in general is, yeah, I just don't see anything wrong with that. I know some people are very for the nuclear family, but yeah.
Great discussion. Thanks.
Yeah.
As usual, a little rambling and a little, you know, here and there, but I think there was some good food for thought there in terms of how we think about family. And, you know, if you're listening and, you know, you, like me, came from a nuclear family, it just thinking about, you know, those things that worked and didn't work, and how you might try to make your family life a little bit different and a little bit more, I don't know, pushing the boundaries. Because ultimately, you know, society shapes families, but families can also shape society, and that reciprocity in terms of behavior goes both ways.
Yeah. So thank you everyone so much for listening. Intravenous is every Wednesday at 10 a.m. And this was Stella.
Logan.
Robin.
Bye.